It seemed like a good idea at the time. Have you ever done that? Tried something that just totally backfired on you? I cannot believe how stupid I was and how much pain I caused a lot of people. Let me tell you what happened. You know my wife Sarai, don't you? Well, then you know that she is one very strong woman. She's had to put up with me all of these years. That's part of it. First, she was willing to move from Ur, her hometown, to Haran. The more difficult part, however, is when I finally asked her to leave Haran, where her family was located at that time, and to follow me to this part of the world, Canaan. This isn't exactly the center of the universe. Things have changed a lot in Canaan since we first settled here. There wasn't a soul here that we knew at the time except Lot, and we had brought him with us. Not long after we got here, things dried up. I mean, literally, quite a drought. We had to move again. We went down to Egypt. Things were going fine in Egypt until the king saw Sarai. She's a very good-looking woman. And he decided that he wanted her for his wife. And at that point, I blew it big time. I asked Sarai if she would claim to be my sister so that the Egyptian king wouldn't kill me in order to get her. And would you believe she did it? Would you believe I asked her to do something like that? The pressure was pretty intense. I couldn't help but thinking that being separated from her was better than being dead. But in order to save my own skin, I hadn't factored in God. Somehow, in spite of all that God had been doing for us, I just forgot about him in the equation. Went ahead and did that. You know, as I think back, I'll never forget the day that God came to me in Haran. It could not have been any clearer. There was no mistake about it. God was telling me and my family to go to Canaan. And he said just as clearly as that we should go, that he would give to Sarai and me a large family. In fact, a family that was great in number and a family that would have a significant impact on the entire world. Well, here I am, down here in Egypt. I'd known for a long time that Sarai couldn't have children. I knew that, in fact, before we left Ur. But God's promise was so clear. God's statement that he would, in fact, give us not only a land, but would give us a family was so clear that we went. And as I said, now here we are in Egypt. Not in Canaan, but in Egypt. And I have just given my wife to another man. You talk about messing up God's plan. I had done it. Well, you know what happened. God got a hold of that pagan king. Ironic, isn't it? He couldn't get a hold of me, one of his followers, one who claims that he believes in God. Instead, he had to get a hold of a pagan king, and got to get a hold of him he did, and then that king did the unbelievable. He gave my wife Sarai back to me, and he allowed me to keep all that he, the king, had given me as a dowry, and he let us go. I didn't trust God enough to stand up to that king in the first place and say that Sarai wasn't available to him because God had plans for Sarai and me. Instead, I blew it. And God had to show me that he was able to do the even more incredible thing, get the king to change his mind. You'd have thought through that experience and even some others that I would have learned by now. But back to Sarai. I said that she is one very strong woman. She went through all of that with me. Later on, she went through that experience where I gave the best part of the land to our nephew Lot, and we stayed in Canaan. She wasn't present at the time, but she believed me when I told her that God had come to me and had reassured me that we would have children. She then waited through the weeks that I was gone chasing after Lot because the kings from the east had kidnapped him. She didn't know if I'd ever make it back alive or not. She believed me just a couple of years ago when I told her that God again had come to me and said that my servants would not be the heirs to our estate, but that we ourselves would have children. And I told her that God had bound himself to that promise with a very dramatic covenant that he made with me. I'm a fairly wealthy man now, and like me, Sarai has a lot of responsibilities. It's like managing a fairly large business with lots of employees. She even has servants of her own. One of them is a woman named Hagar. It's a woman that she acquired when we were living in Egypt. And that really brings me to the story that I wanted to tell you. That stupid thing that I did that seemed like such a good thing at the time. I needed to tell you a little bit about Sarai because I think that if you know her a little better, you will maybe understand how I got into the mess that I was in. I think I've already told you that Sarai can't have kids. I think I've also already told you that the whole reason that we are here in Canaan is because God told us to come here, and God also promised us that we would have a large family. Well, we'd already been in this land 10 years by the time of the incident I'm telling you about, and Sarai was 65 years of age when we first came. Makes her 75 now. Like me, I think she believed at the beginning when we first came that God would somehow do the miraculous and that God would allow her, that is us, to have a child, even at her age and mine. But the longer it went on, I guess, the less she believed. I should have seen it coming. I should have seen some of the signs of the discouragement that were building in her over these last 10 years. She had left her family and had moved here with me, building her whole life around the idea that she would have children. And then 10 years pass and nothing. Nothing except following me around and all the messes I've gotten us into. One day, Sarai came to me with this idea. She said that since God obviously wasn't going to give her any children, that I should sleep with her maid Hagar, and that I should have a child by her maid. Now, I know, I should have stood up to Sarai right there at that time and stopped the whole idea before it went 1 minute further, but you have to know Sarai to know how adamant she can be about something. Now, when she gets an idea, she usually has thought it through, and I could tell at that moment she was not about to be dissuaded. Now, some of you men might think, what were you complaining about, Abram? Wait a minute. I need you to know that I'm as human as any other man, but this wasn't about sex. Hormones are not what gave this idea any credibility. You see, I had gotten to the same place, I think, where Sarai had gotten. I told you last week that I had struggled with doubt. I too had begun to wonder if I had even heard God correctly. I too began to wonder if God would do what he had promised, that is, that he would actually give us a family of our own. But just as much, I began to wonder if maybe I hadn't done something that I was supposed to be doing to help God's promises come to pass. If God wouldn't do it, then maybe I would need to help God out. So here I was, entertaining Sarai's idea. Now, what made the idea even more thinkable was that it wasn't unusual in the cultures around us for a man to get his family in this way. If the wives of wealthy men had no children, they could have a surrogate have a child for them. I know that you know about surrogate motherhood. But I want you to know that in those days we didn't have in vitro fertilization and we didn't know about test tube babies and all the things that you have. In the laws of the nations around us, the child of Sarai's servant would legally become Sarai's child. That sounded like a plan to us. We could help God out. So there we were helping him out, and all because we couldn't trust God any longer to do what God had promised. We no longer trusted that he would act in the way that he said he would. Now, I've told you what made the idea attractive to us, but I have not yet told you why I should have stepped right in at the very beginning and nipped this cockamamie idea in the bud. I remembered later, of course not then, but later I remembered Genesis chapter 2. God made it very clear that marriage was meant to be a one-man, one-woman relationship for life. God also made it very clear in those early chapters of Genesis that the sexual relationship was reserved for that one man, one woman marriage. See, I began to rationalize that since God couldn't give us a family without us breaking that one man, one woman standard for life, that we would have to break that standard in order to accomplish this higher purpose. I realize now that I just truthfully did not trust him enough to believe that God could or would do the impossible. I also, as I reflect back on it, should have seen right through Sarai's request right from the beginning. When she came to me, it's really very interesting now, when she came to me, she did to me exactly the same thing that Eve did to Adam. It's recorded in Genesis 3. There it says that Eve took the fruit, gave it to Adam, and he ate it. Well, in the midst of it, I didn't catch it, but Sarai took her servant Hagar, gave her to me, and I took her. Oh, the parallels now strike me. I was falling for the same old line. Here I was, thousands of years later, doing exactly the same thing. Looking back on the whole situation now, I realize how little I trusted God. When God asked me to wait, I grew impatient. Then I took charge. Then I determined that I would have to take over for God in this situation. This is too important not to do something. Have you ever done that? I think you know that about 14 years later, I had a son. His name was Isaac. And I had that son the way God promised. It was a miracle. Sarai was the mother. But that's another story. When our son Isaac married, Rebekah, his wife, was also barren. I guess it runs in the family. But you know what Isaac did? Now, I'm the head of the family. I'm the one that God has spoken to and called into this land, and I had to learn this from my own son. My son Isaac, in that situation, prayed. Why didn't I think of that? Well, I must confess, for a while, Sarai and I prayed, but then we gave up. No, in fact, we prayed for a long time. I think at least a couple of years. We gave up. I stopped trusting that God could work his plan in his way and in his timing. When it looked impossible, when it looked like it was taking too long, I stopped praying. I stopped trusting. I started thinking about how I could help God out. You know what I was doing? I stopped depending on God and started to depend on myself. Though I never would have said it at the time, and I don't even like saying the words now, I actually had come to the place where I was convinced that my actions were more important in getting this accomplished than God's actions were. And my lack of prayer about the important things of life is the best evidence there is that that had happened in me. I stopped praying because, frankly, I stopped trusting. I trusted more in me, in my actions, than I did in God. But back to the story. I said it all seemed like a good idea at the time. Just as Sarai had planned, Hagar got pregnant. All was well, right? Wrong. And you can't believe how wrong it all was. Not having a child in our culture is probably the worst thing that can happen to a woman, besides not being married, I guess. And having a child is probably the best thing in our culture that can happen to a woman. You may not understand that because you wouldn't understand how in our culture, how significant having children is. To us, it means everything. There's not only the joy of having a child, there's also the security of having children. We didn't have the same systems in our old age that you enjoy. But it was more than just joy and security. It's the whole issue of carrying on the family name. Our very existence as a family depends on having children. Well, when Hagar got pregnant, she got uppity. Now, I can't tell you because I really don't know, but I can just imagine all of the ways that she needled Sarai. Everything from words that she would say with a subtle nuance to looks that she would give her. But whatever it was altogether, it drove Sarai nuts. That little wench Hagar was acting like she was now the queen of the bull. One of our poets, a number of years later, wrote these words. Boy, does it fit. It's in Proverbs 30. Under three things the earth trembles. No, under four it cannot bear up. One, a servant who becomes king. Two, a fool who is full of food. Three, an unloved woman who is married. And this is the one I wanted you to hear, a maid servant who displaces her mistress. The way Hagar strutted her pregnancy made Sarai so angry that Sarai finally came to me with a statement that was so incoherent, lacked such logic, that I could hardly believe my ears. This is what she said. Abram, you are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me, Abram. I had never seen her so angry. My first reaction was, and I thought it, of course, what do you mean, me? How am I responsible for this? But I'd learned through the years this was not the right time to try to deal with logic. She was so angry. But then I made another mistake. Not wanting to put up with Sarai's wrath, I simply bailed out of my responsibility once again. I told Sarai, do whatever you want to do. She's yours. Do whatever you choose. Responsibility toward Hagar. But I didn't fulfill it. She was one of our servants. She was a woman who depended on us. I had a responsibility for the child that she carried. After all, it was my child. But looking out once again, just to save my own skin, I abdicated responsibility. I had not realized how offended and how affected Sarai was by this, how threatened she felt. And she put Hagar under such pressure that Hagar finally just ran. And it's not like she could catch a bus from Shechem down to Cairo. She had to walk. And that area is desert, like between Las Vegas and Los Angeles. I didn't know what would happen to her. Now, I wasn't there for what happened next, but I heard about it later, and it had a profound impact on me. As guilty as I felt for not intervening and somehow saving Hagar on the baby, I must confess that I felt a sense of release. Sarai had now started to settle down again. The tensions between the two of us were being resolved, and at least for a short time, in spite of the mistakes I made, I felt like, well, at least that's over. I'm so glad I was wrong about that. I may have felt like it was all over, but God had very, very different plans. And what blows me away now is that his plans were not for punishing me, but his plans were for my good. God took that mess that I'd been party to, and God used it to teach all of us, especially me, very important lessons. Hagar was out there on her own, and she made it as far as a water well on her way down to Egypt. It's the one between Kadesh and Bered. It's still there. There at that water well, an angel of the Lord met her. Now, I still don't know if that was God himself or one of his chief angels. It really doesn't matter, because whoever it was, they spoke with all the authority of God. And God said to her, where did you come from? Where are you going? Now, when I heard that God asked that question, I could not help but think of two other occasions, one Adam and Eve and the other later on with Cain, when God asked a similar question. And on both of those occasions, they kind of weaseled around the question, but not Hagar. She answered very straightforwardly. She said, I'm running away from my mistress Sarai. Now, what happened next was kind of bad news and good news, but it was truly a generous, a gracious thing that God did for her and for me. The bad news, I think, from Hagar's perspective, was that she was asked by God to go back to Sarai, and furthermore, to submit to her. Now, if I had gone through what Hagar had been going through these last several months, I don't think I could have done what she did. I would be very, very afraid of going back. But God, in essence, told her to submit to Sarai, even if it was painful, because, and here was the good news that God gave her, it will eventually be worth it. God told her, that is Hagar, that she would become the mother of a great nation. He specifically said that she would have children too numerous to count. I'd heard that statement before. It had been said to Sarai and me. God was asking Hagar to do what he had already asked Sarai and me to do, and that is to simply trust him. But here's the best part. There's a little symbolism involved here, but I think you'll catch it as I did. I got the message loudly and clearly. The angel stood there before Hagar at that water well after telling her to go back and submit to Sarai, and he said, "You're going to have a son, and I want you to name him Ishmael." You know what that name means? It means God hears. God hears. God knew that that message would get back to me. God knew exactly how I would hear this, the rest of this story, and the message would come back. And so here I was listening to an Egyptian slave remind me of the very things that I should have remembered and believed all along. And that is that God not only heard Hagar's misery in the midst of her flight, but that same God heard Sarai's and my misery. He knew how much we longed for a child. He knew our impatience for the future. He had not forgotten us. I could still trust him in spite of how long it was taking for his promises to be fulfilled. The very name of that child spoke of it. Well, if it was an embarrassment that an Egyptian maid should become God's instrument to remind this old patriarch of God's lessons, it was even more embarrassing when I heard of her level of trust, the kind of trust that should have been Sarai's and mine. She trusted God enough that Hagar simply obeyed God. She came back to that shrewish wife of mine. Not only that, but when the angel finished speaking to her, Hagar looked at that angel and she named him. In fact, the place where it happened has carried the same name since that day. And here's the name she used. She called that angel the God who sees. Now, in our language, when she used that name, it did not simply mean that he could see that she was there. When she used that name, the God who sees, she meant he really sees. He cares. Hagar was expressing what I should have expressed from the very beginning. When I was tempted to think that God's waiting was somehow evidence that his promises wouldn't be fulfilled, I should have remembered, no, he's the God who hears my misery, and he's the God who sees and cares what's going on. He has not forgotten. When Sarai came to me with that crazy idea about Hagar, I should have said to her, "No, Sarai, remember, our God hears. He knows what we're going through, and our God cares. Sarai, we must simply wait and pray, trusting in God." And when Sarai blamed me and caused all that misery for Hagar, I should have stepped in and said, "No, Sarai, stop it. Our God is the God who hears, and our God is the God who sees." The waiting that we are sometimes forced into is not a lack or an evidence of lack of love on God's part. In fact, that waiting is actually the evidence that he does love us. One of God's followers later said this, "Faith is forged in delay." The time between the promise and its fulfillment becomes the very furnace in which genuine faith is developed and grows stronger. The thing that I learned most from this whole experience was this. It is God that I have to trust, not me. I quit praying because I began to trust more in myself and my own actions to get something accomplished than I trusted in God. I took over because I began to believe that somehow God needed help. But what I learned is that my trust in God will not grow until I cease to trust in myself. My trust in him won't grow until I stop trusting myself. Hagar had her baby. I named him Ishmael, just as God had directed. In fact, from that day forward, every time I heard his name, it was a reminder to me of the God who hears. That son of mine became a living testimony to me of God's grace and God's faithfulness. I wish I hadn't been so slow to learn. I wish I hadn't been so stupid as to cause people so much pain in the midst of all this, but God was gracious, as I said. He took my mess and he turned it into a great lesson of faith. I don't know what you are waiting for. I don't know what it is that feels like it's never going to happen. I don't know what it is that tempts you to doubt that God may in fact come through, to wonder if you heard him correctly. I don't know what it is that maybe has even caused you to stop praying for something that is so, so important. But I know this. Our God is faithful. He hears. That is, he knows the situation we are in. And I know this. He sees. That is, he cares about what is going on. He, the sovereign promise-keeping God, is still there. I learned it. Well, now I had to learn it over and over again, but I urge it on you nonetheless. Wait. Pray. Don't usurp God's place.